People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. My guest is a highly respected performer, entrepreneurial producer and innovative director, as well as a operatic soprano, and I'm talking about Magdalene Minnaar. She's known in the industry as someone who enjoys setting new trends and challenging conventional boundaries, as we'll hear. As a performer, Magdalene is firmly established across different musical genres. She's well known as an operatic soprano who has performed in numerous operas to great acclaim, and her collaborations with renowned musicians such as, just for example, Josh Groban and even Boney M. are examples of her immense versatility. Magdalene sang the female lead in the international touring production of Showboat and played the role of Christine in The Phantom of the Opera in South Africa. And she's just directed a brand new musical called Calling Us Home, which has been on here at the Artscape Theatre. In fact, I think it ends the very day this is being broadcast. Magdalene, welcome to Fine Music Radio.
Thank you so much, Rodney.
You're one of those guests who I like to say it's long overdue that you that you've been in here. Where have you been? But it sounds as though you are quite busy. Let's talk initially. I know it's just ended its run in Cape Town, but Calling Us Home must have been quite a challenge because it was completely new. You all had to start from scratch. So when you were asked to be the director, how did you feel?
Well, I felt incredibly honored. Obviously, you know, as a, I suppose, relatively young director, it's always a big honor when someone hands over their work and says, please, will you put this on stage? Luckily, throughout my career as producer and director, I've had a lot of chances to work on not grand scale musicals, but slightly smaller productions as new works. So that muscle has been kind of steadily improving.
Yes.
But it's a new journey. You know, each creative team is different. They work in different ways. They are made up of different personalities, of different ways of thinking. And this was an incredibly creative process, obviously working with Alice Gillam, who not only produced the new musical but also wrote and composed it,
the whole thing, yes.
Which is quite a lot. Just working with her for the past 2.5 years, well, it's now almost 3 years actually, and just seeing how this musical takes shape from inception to where it is now. And
so were you part
changed.
Of the whole process?
Yes.
When Alice started writing, because she said, when I chatted to her last week, I think she said that you had been in really from the beginning. So you saw it being developed as it went along.
Absolutely. So when she asked me to pitch against some other directors, I saw what was then the kind of final draft to start work on. We then took that draft and basically turned it into what was then called Calling Me Home. It had a working title before. We put that on as a development run in Johannesburg in 2017, which was a whole different story, and then did a whole lot of rewriting and workshopping on what we now know as Calling Us Home, which Cape Town audiences hopefully have seen in the past 2.5 weeks.
And the other thing, you had no sort of benchmark to work from. Very often, I presume, if you're producing another show, you might think, oh, well, I remember this production, I remember that, I don't want to do that. You were really starting from scratch. This was from the ground up.
Yes, absolutely. But for me, that is the most exciting part because, look, we all know that everything has been done in music, in art, in everything. But it is very special to have a creative team work on something, like I say, from inception and building it up to something bigger. So you have literally just the words on the page and the notes on the page. So it's all black and white and you have to turn it into something. It's a very different process. And also just, I suppose, not trying to be different, but trying to find the truth of that specific work is it's challenging, but it's also invigorating
and rewarding, I'm sure, when
and
you
very
see it
rewarding.
On the stage,
yes.
Finally,
yeah.
In all its glorious color.
Absolutely.
And with the music and everything. Mm. It must be almost like your baby that's come to life there on the stage.
Absolutely. And then you have to start raising this baby and killing your darlings and seeing what still doesn't work. And then go back and rewrite even a little bit more and changing even a little bit more. And
so obviously you had a good working relationship with Alice Gillam, the composer, because,
yes.
I mean, you seem to have worked very well together. And by all accounts, it's had very good response, hasn't it? Critical response. So clearly you didn't have fights and throw things around.
I think it's also interesting because we were, in a lot of times, it was just Alice and myself working together as opposed to having the producer and the writer and the composer plus myself working as four people. So that has been very interesting, just the two of us working very closely together. But yes, it's been, I mean, developing a musical is, it's quite hair-raising, but I think in terms of how hair-raising it can be, we did exceptionally well and we didn't kill each other.
Well,
yeah.
Magdalene, I'm interested to know what you're going to choose. I hope you've chosen something with your singing in it, because we're talking all about you being a director now, but many people know you as an established operatic soprano. And your first piece, I see, is Don't Cry For Me, Argentina, from Evita. And you're going to sing this for us. Tell us a bit about this recording.
Yes, so this recording was a live recording that was taken from the Capital Singers, which is a project that happens in Pretoria by the very well-known choral conductors Michael Barrett and Christo Burger. They came up with an incredibly interesting concept, like I say, called Capital Singers, where they invite ex-choir or choral singers to come and join them for a weekend. And these singers then pay a small fee and they get recordings in advance and sheet music in advance. They learn it on their own and they come together for these 3 days of rehearsals. And it's always a themed concert. So the one where the Don't Cry For Me Argentina was from was music from musicals. And it was called Musical Extravaganza. And we get together and we rehearse this. It's with an orchestra and it's just a beautiful event. And I think by the time that we recorded this, the choir was 400-piece strong choir. I'm now doing one for them for Christmas, where they already have over 600 entrants, and they are aiming for over 1,000 singers.
Oh,
so it's quite a unique concept, and
yeah.
it's just so much fun singing with them, and it's always just beautiful. You get enveloped by the sound, and I also get to stand in the middle of the choir, which is really nice. So this recording is actually an arrangement by Janine Nietling for Capital Singers.
It won't be easy, you'll think it's strange, when I try to explain. Feel that I still need your love after all that I've done. You won't believe me. All you will see is a girl you once knew, although she's dressed up to the nines. Distance.
The famous song from Evita, almost an anthem, isn't it? Don't Cry for Me, Argentina, sung there by my guest on People of Note this week, Magdalene Minar, with those singers who are called?
The Capital Singers.
The Capital Singers, 400 of them. Magdalene, we've been talking about your role in the producing of, directing of Calling Us Home, but as I mentioned earlier, I think primarily of you as a singer, as an operatic singer.
Yes.
I know you cross many genres, as we've said, but I just want to concentrate on that for a moment, since we've just heard you singing. And has that been, how did you begin the whole career as a singer? Has this been part of your life for as long as you can remember?
Absolutely. Apparently, I opened my eyes when I was born, and my grandfather said, who was a very keen tenor, and he said, oh, it's an opera singer. And I kind of was labeled that for forever. I was just always the singing child. I look at my son now, and he's also singing all the time, so I'm getting slightly worried because it's not the easiest career choice.
How old is your son?
He's 4 and a half.
Oh, and he's already singing?
He's already singing, and he always ends on the tonic, which, you know, it's a good sign.
It's a good sign.
It's a good sign. Exactly. Yes, I was always singing, and my parents are classical music lovers, so they raised me with, you know, all the staples that a child can ask for, and also very keen choral singers. So I joined choirs from a very young age. Later on, I went to Proarte, which is an art school, and I got the opportunity to join the South African National Youth Choir. Yes. And also got a bursary to go to Eton College to do a choral course there, which
the
was
one, you're
phenomenal.
Talking about Eton in England?
Correct.
I see.
Is correct, yes. That was rather remarkable. So that was kind of the sort of the music and choral side. I also played violin and the bassoon in various orchestras while growing up. And generally a big love for music. And then went on to study music, firstly opera. Actually, I did a stint of drama at Tuckies while making up my mind and trying to find a very good singing teacher, which I then chose Nelly de Toy. So I came to Cape Town and started taking lessons with her while doing my degree at UCT.
Gosh.
And so it developed.
And so it was always going to be music and always singing. not the bassoon.
Yes, no, the bassoon was a very good season in my life, but it wasn't a career choice for me, no.
Mark Tadeen, then can you remember your debut and when you first started entering this frightening world of opera?
Yes, I remember a whole bunch of failed overseas auditions, if that's what you're referring to.
No.
I mean, it's a dog-eat-dog world. It's just, you know, a problem with a lot of young opera singers is that they keep telling you, especially when you have a light voice like myself, and I'm going to put that in inverted commas, actually, because the voice grows, but you get to Germany, or I also auditioned in Holland and in the UK, and they say, oh, no, but you're still too young. And you get that for a long time, and then suddenly you are too old.
Oh, my goodness.
And this happens, it kind of happens overnight. It's very confusing. I look at some of my friends who were in the Cape Town Opera studio with me, like Golda Schultz, who's doing phenomenally well overseas. And I chat to her regularly about how difficult it is to actually have a full-on career as an opera singer. And I mean, I commend people who can take it that far. For me, living out of a suitcase, living in another country wasn't very appealing. I wanted to rather come back, and I've always had this passion for creating theatre, which is where I feel far happier. Obviously never stop singing, but that's kind of
and
how it
how would
out.
You describe your voice? We heard you singing Don't Cry for Me, Argentina. How would you describe your voice? Is it a lyrical soprano?
I'm actually, operatically speaking, my fach is lyric coloratura soprano.
Okay.
So I get booked for a lot of the high notes. and as time progressed and I started doing musical theatre, I found another part of my voice, which was more the lower register, and I started delving into a little bit of jazz and crossover. I mean, I hate the term crossover, but I think you know what I mean by
it
that.
It describes more or less what goes on, whether we like the term or
absolutely.
Not.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I started kind of finding this different voice and then developing it and also getting a lot of work that way, which was really good at the time, and then having the opportunity to work with, you know, artists like Josh Groban and that kind
How did
of
that come to be? I mean, excuse me, but Boney M.
Boney M.
It's
oh, that's
coming
a good
to
one.
Christmas now, and I know Christmas is the same without Boney M. singing that, Mary's Boy Child.
That is correct.
Which I have to say, I absolutely can't stand.
Well,
every shopping
Rodney,
center.
I'm going to have to differ from you
okay.
because I really love Boney M.
This is a confession
so,
time.
It is a confession time. So when I finished my stint at the Cape Town Opera Studio, I suddenly realized that I didn't have work. So I auditioned for a very well-known Cape Town string ensemble called Sterling EQ, where
wow.
I played the electric violin for a year. And we had a lot of amazing opportunities to go all over the world with this electric quartet, and I also sang a little bit in the group. And the one booking that we had in Dubai was beautiful collaboration with Boney M. So we met them and we collaborated with them, and it was just, I mean, it was phenomenal. And we're still friends with them. So
what is it about them that you like? Is it the music or the people?
You know
or the
what?
Energy?
It's the energy and the It's the innocence and the joy of their music, which for me is just incredible. And also, when I was a young child, I was always a producer and a director, I think, growing up. So my brother and I had a standing collaboration for Christmas to make a Christmas tape for our parents. He would do the design, and then I would musically direct all these songs that we do, and they were all Boney M songs. And we would take the cake tins and the shakers, and he would play a bit of cello, and I would play a bit of violin and a bit of piano and a bit of glockenspiel and whatever, and we would sing these arrangements that we had made together and then give that as a gift to our parents on tape. And those were mostly inspired by Boney M.
Well, let me have a look at the list here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, Boney M.
No.
You're allowed to stay. So
thank
next
you.
Time I hear Boney M singing Mary Boy Child in the shopping center, I shall think of you and
Fantastic.
Maybe try and listen.
Great.
But let's have another piece of music. And I see some jazz coming up. Tell us about this piece.
Yes. For an opera singer, I don't listen to a lot of opera. I actually listen to a very wide range of music. And I discovered Melody Gardot through a very good friend of mine. and she's a blind jazz singer with the most phenomenal voice. And I specifically chose this song because the saxophone solo halfway through the song sounds like the human voice. It is absolutely exquisite.
If you ask me plainly, I would gladly say I'd like to have you round just for them rainy days. I like the touch of your hand, the way you make no demands. Our love is easy. Our love is easy, like water rushing over stone. Oh, our love is easy, like no love I've ever known. Physically speaking, we were made to last. Examine all the pieces of our recent past. There's your mouth I taste, your hands around my waist. Our love is easy, every time we meet, it's like the first we kiss. Never growing tired of this endlessness. It's a simple thing, we don't need a ring. Our love is easy, our love is easy, like water rushing over stone. Oh, our love is easy, like no love I've ever known.
There's a touch of jazz on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. Our love is easy, a choice of my guest, Magdalene Minnar. Magdalene, who was that? An extraordinary voice. Tell me more.
Yes, she's a singer called Melody Gardo, and this album is one of my most listened albums of all time, and it's called My One and Only Thrill. It's definitely something for your collection, Rodney.
Oh, really? My collection or Fine Music Radio's collection?
Or absolutely Fine Music Radio's collection, and for the listeners.
We're discovering this other side of you because I really have always thought of you as an operatic soprano. And when I heard that you were directing Calling Us Home, I actually thought maybe it was another Magdalene Menard with the same name.
Because there are so many of us.
Yes, and remember we worked together for the Gilbert and Sullivan 75th anniversary, where you sang all those lovely coloratura songs, well, in a sense, by Sullivan.
Yes, well, it was a phenomenal concert.
Yeah. Anyway, now look, we spoke about your career as an operatic soprano there, but then there's always been this directorial creative side to you by the sounds of things, as you said, your young brother and you. So when did you actually sort of switch and think, no, I want to be more involved, I'm going to put singing aside? Although you said you didn't put it aside, but nonetheless. How did the switch happen?
Well, I feel like they have always been kind of hand in hand. And I come from a very creative family. My parents are both architects. My brother has since the Boney M tape, become quite a well-known designer and artist and animator.
What is his name? Would we know him?
Louis Menard. And he also he directs ads. He actually just directed and animated the first ever Afrikaans sci-fi film.
Oh my goodness.
Called Sickless, which is now going around the world on the film cycle. So I've always had all this creativity around me, and since quite a young age, actually, I started kind of producing these little pockets of weird and wonderful things. Things like a rap group that I started, for which I was nearly expelled for in standard two in my primary school.
I can't believe it either.
I'm shocked. Such a rebel. Yeah, also because I suppose I went to Pro Arte, which is an art school. So yes, I specialized in music, but I was always kind of in with the drama crowd and the art crowd. And we did quite interesting things there because we were given the opportunity to really just open our minds. I mean, it was a little bit like the musical Fame, you know, just a lot of platforms to play around with. And when I eventually moved to Cape Town, I started being involved in all the different arts festivals, and I met a lot of really remarkable people. I mean, in the arts worlds, curators, directors, producers, choreographers, and somehow also very good friend of mine at the time, Bram de Toy, is a composer. He's now quite a well-known film and TV composer. We started working on all these different things, and I don't know, just through, I suppose, curiosity and this inherent, I suppose, creativity, I just always stuck with kind of the weird and wonderful side of theater. And it was very interesting to me. And I saw from a young age directors like Martinez Basson and Jacob Bauer working together and, you know, creating beautiful and exceptional and extraordinary things.
Martinez must have been quite an inspiration. I mean, he's even had a bash at opera, hasn't he?
Absolutely.
To great effect.
Yeah,
Rigoletto, I think he did quite recently.
That's correct, for Cape Town Opera. And I suppose growing up, in a sense, with those people around me, and I mean, I was very privileged later on in my life to become friends with Jacob Bauer and work with him on a whole bunch of productions creatively. I saw that for me, singing almost isn't enough, if that makes sense.
Yes, I think I can understand.
I mean, I feel very blessed that I have a voice that's good enough that I get booked, that I have enough work to pay the bills. And I love performing. I absolutely love singing. I've been on all the big stages in South Africa and some of the big stages in the world. And, oh, that sounds very...
No, okay.
sounds
I'm not going to stop you.
Actually. But what I'm trying to say is that I always felt, when I'm directed, that I want to go to the director and say, why did you make that choice? Or can't we just move this around? Or can I give you my side of what I think?
Dear.
Yes, oh dear, indeed. I got into lots of trouble. But I also remember actually having a conversation with Angelo Gabata, who was our professor at the UCT Opera School in my first year. And I went to him and I said, Prof, I want to be an opera director. And he looked at me and he said, well, you can't study for that, so just keep doing what you're doing. And that kind of also stuck with me, because this notion that a director has to come from a drama background. Now, luckily, I had a bit of the drama background in the first year in Pretoria. But it's actually not. When you look at the great directors in the world for musical theater, for opera, for film, a lot of them come from other backgrounds. And it's this kind of mosaic that you bring together of all your passions and, I suppose, talents and insights that makes you then find your own voice, which makes you become a theater maker. So that has kind of been my journey.
Well, I want to talk about a mission, apparently, I read somewhere, to reinvent the face of classical music in South Africa, which is quite a sweeping statement.
It is quite a sweeping statement. That is correct.
Wait. We'll come to that after the third piece of music. Where are we? Gosh, time is flying here. I see you've chosen a Mozart concert aria as opposed to an aria from one of his operas.
Yes. I have a very special relationship with this aria. It's called Vorrei Spiegarvi O Dio. I've sung it a couple of times in South Africa. It's quite a long aria, quite an indulgent coloratura aria, which is called one of his concert arias. It doesn't get performed much, but it is just, for me, it's just the essence of beauty.
And who's going to be singing it for us?
This will be sung by the amazing Diana Damrau.
Oh. There you are, a concert aria by Mozart, not one of his opera arias, a concert aria. And we only took part of the aria because, as you said, Magdalena, it is quite long. And tell me who the Diana Damrau.
It was Diana Damrau singing the beautiful Vorrei spiegarvi odio.
Okay. Magdalena Minar is my guest on People of Note this week. Magdalena has just finished, well, the run of Calling Us Home, which Magdalena directed, has just finished here at Artscape. They're hoping to send it overseas, or what is the story there? What happens to it now? All this work that's happened both in Johannesburg and here with this big production at Artscape, are you going to tour it anymore, or is everything being thought about?
Yes, absolutely. So the plan is to take this, I almost want to call it a baby, because it feels like a baby.
On the air that you are expecting another
yes,
child.
Yes, that
and
is
when
right.
And when are they due?
In January.
Oh, well,
yes.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So now back to the other baby.
Yes, so the musical baby. So I suppose whenever you do a musical of this scale, the hope is to take it overseas and to let it run. But there are already some really, really interested parties in all over the world for this musical, which is quite
That's
nice.
Very good news. Very, very good news.
Very good. And the idea is to start in 2019, tour this to various countries in the world and see what the reception is abroad. I mean, I think it's very brave of Alice Gillam, who's the producer, to write something that is in essence a very South African story, but which is kind of universal enough that an international audience will find it appealing.
Exactly, especially with the refugee situation. Everyone in the world can relate to that at the moment.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I wish you luck. Let's hope that happens.
Thank you very much.
It'd be great to export a big full-on no holds barred musical, wouldn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And something that also isn't very obviously South African necessarily, but more just like a flavor of Africa with an actual, I suppose, a world message.
Yes, indeed. Okay, but now, the other thing, just before our piece of music, I quoted you and you got all embarrassed, but it does say it here. It is her mission to reinvent the face of classical music in South Africa. Now, this obviously is a sweeping statement written by PR people, I dare say. But what exactly does that mean? You've worked on rather avant-garde productions. I saw Same Loch Ness, an electronic opera back in 2004. The recycled magic flute.
Yes.
It's all rather scary. Yeah. What's this all about?
Yes, I suppose I have quite an avant-garde, underground taste in all things music and theatre and art. The sweeping statement that you're referring to, I suppose, also comes from my passion for developing audience. And I've always, when I go on stage, I look out at the sea of faces or the not sea of faces, which sometimes is a trickle. I mean, I've performed for four people before.
Oh, no.
In
a
an
big
auditorium.
Theater.
Which is very disheartening. So for me, it's very important that we start looking at audience building. And building an audience is obviously a very kind of contested subject, and it's not something that happens overnight. But I try to do my bit in assisting that. So I have an ongoing collaboration with the amazing Youngblood Arts and Culture in Brea Street. I met the ex-artistic producer, Marie Vogts, about 5 years ago, and I went to her with a crazy idea of starting a conceptual classical music series with them because I love their space. They have a triple volume gallery where they curate all kinds of beautiful artworks. And it also serves as a kind of an experimental performance space. And so I went to Marie and I said to her, listen, I've got this idea of doing a series in darkness where people can listen to modern or contemporary music like Philip Glass or Arvo Pärt or, you know, whatever it is, George Crumb, in darkness. And so we started developing this, and literally 5 years ago we started with In the Dark, which is now quite a well-known concert series. And through these kind of collaborations, we've had four or five of them over the years with different kind of jackets on. We have welcomed a new audience of maybe a younger crowd, you know, anything from tattoo artists to lawyers who come and they enjoy with a glass of wine, because I feel that it's very important to have a glass of wine while you listening to classical music. just developing that kind of audience.
And do you think, look, you said it's a contested issue, you know, the whole story of dumbing down, which we at Fine Music Radio tried desperately not to do, because we always say we're immensely proud of the fact that we broadcast classical music.
Yes.
So your project is perhaps just aimed at getting people into the theatre, and then hopefully there they could move on and end up watching a Mozart opera or a Wagner opera.
Yes, so I would say that the bigger aim with the smaller series would be to lure them into an experience where they go, oh, wow, I just listened to some really difficult classical music. Maybe going to a Mozart opera wouldn't be so difficult. We even saw this when Jakub Bauer and I did Lord Feo for Cape Town Opera about 2 years ago, I think it was, where we saw a lot of the young kind of creatives for the first time coming to opera and going, oh, wow, I didn't know that opera can be so exciting. Yes. I mean, I'm sure that happens with a lot of other Cape Town Opera productions as well. It's not to say that it was that specific production, but I think the aim is to, like you say, not necessarily dumb things down, but to make it as interesting as possible.
As a concept, to conceptualize something
absolutely,
that people can relate to and yet still have the music.
Absolutely. As it was written. And what I found is that we need to also create theater for the young audience who grew up with screens. I mean, things like Netflix is essentially ruining the movie industry because you have direct access to all this content on a device. And I try to not raise my child with a screen, but
you can't help it.
I mean, it's just it's a part of how kids these days. I never thought I would use that term, but I suppose I'm getting older, so there we go. So that's simply a reality, and we have to take that into account when we create theater. Another focus of mine is the really little ones, and that obviously came with having children. So I started a series called Little Maestros, which definitely is, like you say, dumbing down, but it's dumbing down in a different way. That's just a series that has now gone kind of countrywide, and we also started that at Youngblood Arts and Culture, and I'm very grateful for them for always being so open to my ideas. And that specifically is a series for toddlers and for young pre-primary school kids to fall in love with classical music, and there aren't a lot of those kind of programs around anymore.
Now we're going to take another piece of music, and you've chosen this great Stephen Sondheim song, Tell Me Why, Send in the Clowns.
Oh, this song, I just love this song. I mean, Sondheim is such a master, and this specific recording is the Barbra Streisand recording. I find just the lyrics and how the lyrics and the melody work together, it's just so layered. And also just her story, where she is emotionally when she sings this, it's just so beautiful. It's from the musical Little Night Music.
With my usual flair.
fear. I thought that you'd want what I want. Sorry, my dear. But where are the clowns? There ought to be clowns. Quick, send in the clowns. What a surprise.
Famous song, Send in the Clowns, sung there by Barbara Streisand, and a choice of Magdalene Minnar, who's my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. As time runs out, Magdalene, and now you've just finished calling us home, what is next? You mentioned a few December ideas and things. What's next on your very full agenda by the sound of things?
Well, yes, so I'm directing a Mozart's very first opera for Gauteng Opera, Bastien und Bastien, which is going to be fun. And that's happening in November. And I then join the Capital Singers, like I said, with their Christmas spectacular. And in end of January, beginning of February, I'm directing another recycled version of a Mozart opera. This time it's Die Entführung aus dem Serail, for the Johannesburg International Mozart Festival.
When you say recycled, is it like, could you reuse the word reimagined, which is apparently quite a trendy word at the moment?
Oh, I didn't know that. But no, the concept actually came from a small budget. So I really like working with small budgets in my production company, Bibliothèque Productions, which I started in 2010. I've learned the skill of working with ranging from minute to non-existent budgets. And when I saw this budget, I said, okay, well, I can't do much in terms of visual, but let me go and think about it. And so I came up, because I'm very passionate about recycling and looking after the earth, I came up with the concept of using recycling for our set pieces and all our decor and props and even costumes. So we did the magic flute like that last year, and I completely rewrote it as a family production. So some naughty jokes for the adults and then some, you know, smaller jokes for the kids. And so we're doing the same with Die Entführung this
well,
coming
I hope
year.
You bring it to Cape Town.
That's the idea.
I am right in saying you are based in Pretoria, aren't you?
I am. But
we don't have you in Cape Town.
But I am in Cape Town very often.
Okay. Now, you've chosen an aria from Die Entführung to end. And we have to end now because we run out of time. But Magdalene Minnar, it's been great to speak to you. And it's always good to hear you sing. It's been lovely to hear your selection. And keep in touch and bring your productions down here.
I will, definitely. Thank you so much, Ron.
We'll watch more carefully what happens at Youngblood as well.
Thank you.
So here is the aria then from Mozart's opera Die Entführung aus dem Serail.
Oh,
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
Don't miss The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, presented by Peter Turin. From the best-selling novel comes this multi-award-winning play, directed by Paul Warwick Griffin, with an unforgettable cast including Kai Brummer, Lesoho Siabe, Ashley Dowds, Kate Normington, Nicholas Ellenbogen, Liz Simchak, Jenny Stead, Jenna Galloway, Dylan Eady, and Clayton Evertson. Embark on this extraordinary, life-changing journey, making its South African debut at the new Theatre on the Bay, September 25. Book now at peterturin.co.za.